I didn't realize the mayor isn't here.
Yeah.
Hey, look at my chair, Commissioner Fish. It's comfortable. No way.
No, he didn't ask. What? He didn't ask.
He asked what?
Did the mayor ask for this to be said over?
Good evening. The council will come to order. Sue, could you please call the roll?
Adams.
Well, I just want to take this opportunity to let everybody know that I just got back from China yesterday afternoon. So if you see me nodding off, it's not that I'm not interested, and it's not that I don't care. Just feel free to verbally nudge me to stay awake. But I'm pleased to be here. Look forward to the testimony. Aye.
Fish.
Aye. Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Potter.
So first off, I want to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. And before the city gets into our before our city attorney gets into the official explanation of the hearings procedures, I need to make a couple of announcements. First off, the applicant has requested that the hearing be postponed until the full city council is in attendance. Is there a motion to postpone the hearing? Okay, hearing none, the meeting shall proceed. Unless we specify otherwise, during the course of the hearing tonight, the evidentiary record will close at the end of tonight's hearing. Second, we typically give the applicant 15 minutes to address council regarding following the staff report, and then general testimony is taken. Two neighborhood associations, Concordia and Colley, through the Central Northeast Neighbors Coalition, have requested 15 minutes total to address the council as well. So unless there is objection from a member of council, we will set aside 15 minutes of time for these two neighborhoods following the applicant's presentation and testimony from supporters of the application or the applicant. After the neighborhood association testimony, we will hear from opponents of the application, followed by rebuttal from the applicant. Due to the large number of people here who wish to testify, we will limit testimony to 2 minutes each. And finally, I want to point out over here, there is a zoning map that I requested to be prepared for this hearing. I believe it will assist the council in deliberations. So now I want to ask our city attorney, who I can now see as Lindley Reese, to proceed.
Good evening, everyone. This is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. The evidence may be in any form, such as testimony, letters, petitions, slides, photographs, maps, or drawings. Any photographs, drawings, maps, or other items you show to council during your testimony should be given to the council clerk at the end of your testimony to make sure it becomes part of the record. Testimony tonight concerning the hearings officer's recommendation will be heard as follows. We will begin with a staff report by BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following staff report, council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and have 15 minutes to address council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 2 minutes to speak. As Commissioner Salzman mentioned, at that point we'll have representatives of two neighborhood associations who have a total of 15 minutes to testify. Then council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Again, each of these persons will have 2 minutes to testify. At that point, the applicant will then have time to rebut the testimony given in opposition to the proposal. That is typically 5 minutes. I have been informed that the applicant is possibly going to request additional time, so I just want to prepare council for that consideration. At that point, council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. If the vote is tentative, council will set a future date for adoption of findings and a final vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. However, this afternoon, the applicant requested a 7-day period after the record is closed to submit final written argument. The request is based on ORS 197-763-6E, which provides the local government shall allow the applicant 7 days after the record is closed to submit final written arguments in support of the application. If the council closes the record tonight and concludes the hearing in this matter, it is recommended that the council grant the applicant a 7-day period to submit final written argument. This would not preclude council from deliberating toward a decision this evening, but with the 7-day period and the likely time needed to allow staff to prepare a revised finding, it would preclude adoption of a final decision this evening. Finally, I would like to announce several guidelines for those presenting testimony and participating in the hearing. These guidelines are established by zoning code and state law and are as follows. First, your testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code that you believe apply to this decision. BDS staff will identify applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to council. Second, any issues you raise must be raised with specificity. If you fail to raise an issue clearly enough to give council and the parties an opportunity to respond to that issue, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Finally, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge the conditions of approval.
That concludes. Thank you, Lindley.
Actually, I have a question.
Sure.
So, Lindley, I was listening to your instructions, and you said something there we don't normally hear.
Correct.
With respect to the 7 days that the record will remain open, which I understood. The part that I need some clarification on is the council can't take final action. My experience has been we don't normally do that anyway. We make a motion at the end of a hearing based on what we've heard, and we tentatively adopt the motion contingent upon staff and you developing findings that we finally adopt at some point in the future. So is that any different than what we're going to do tonight?
So 2 points. One, we would not, if we close the record tonight, we would not leave it the record open. Those additional 7 days would simply be for the applicant to make argument in response. Basically, because they're anticipating a great deal of testimony today, it will be difficult to respond to all of that today. State law gives them the opportunity to have the last word in 7 days, but it will not be any new evidence. The record would be closed. The second point is, you're correct, it isn't any different than a day when we would take a tentative decision and come back with findings. Other than that, we would certainly be open to the possibility that the argument would be persuasive enough to change whatever your tentative thoughts are. There are circumstances in which we do take a final vote when we simply adopt the findings of the hearings officer. So we won't be doing that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, a couple more procedural steps. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest? Seeing none. Do any members of council have any ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose?
Dan, I would like to declare that on Tuesday, September 16th, I ran into Bob Salinger of the Audubon Society at City Hall. We talked about a number of things unrelated to this, but in the course of a 30-second conversation, he did state his position about the Colwood Golf Course proposal.
I need to declare an ex parte contact with the applicant. My staff was meeting with Mr. Hartle just over a year ago, and I joined them for about 10 minutes. They filled me in on their plan to pursue a zone change at the property, and the meeting was concluded shortly after that. And as the Parks Commissioner, I have been briefed by Portland Parks and Recreation on their perspective regarding this zone change request. Okay. No, that was it for me.
As in discussion of the overall strategic plan for the Portland Bureau of Parks, had a brief discussion with Zeri Santner on this issue, and in my travels out and about in the community with both business and neighborhood advocates have listened to very brief comments representing all sides of, or many sides of this issue.
And apparently, I'm just not popular enough to contact, so.
Does anyone present in the council chambers wish to ask Commissioner Fish, myself, or Commissioner Adams about any more about the ex parte contact or information that we've just disclosed? Okay. So if council members have no other questions, then we'll go ahead and hear from the staff. We'll hear the staff report.
Good evening. I'm Sheila Fregoli, the assigned planner for this land use review, which is case file LU05-138386-CPZC. The applicant, representing the owners of the Coldwood National Golf Course, is requesting an amendment to the comprehensive plan map from open space to the industrial sanctuary designation, and is also asking that the zoning be changed from the open space zone to the general industrial 2 zone. Requested is a zone and map designation change for approximately 115 acres on the golf course site. The open space zone and designation would be retained on 22.5 acres. The applicant proposes to donate those 22.5 acres to the city, specifically Portland Parks Bureau. The applicant has offered also to donate $100,000 to Portland Parks to assist in maintenance and physical improvements to the open space. Also, the applicant proposes implementing a number of transportation improvements. Excuse me. The applicant submitted this site map, which identified distinct areas of the Coldwood property. This map uses the term parcel. For example, the area colored green is identified as Parcel 7. This is the portion of the site proposed to remain zoned and designated as open space. The applicant stated that Parcel 1 will be purchased by the Port of Portland for airport-related expansion. All of the parcels except Parcel 7 are proposed to be rezoned and developed for industrial uses. Excuse me. Except for the area shown in blue, this map shows the current zoning. The entire site is zoned open space. The purpose of the open space zone is to preserve and enhance public and private open, natural, and improved park and recreational areas. Along the sloughs, the C Environmental Conservation Overlay Zone has been applied. The C overlay zone is intended to protect resource values while allowing environmentally sensitive development. The X airport noise impact overlay zone and the H aircraft landing overlay zone also covers portions of this site. The noise overlay zone requires sound insulation for certain commercial development and restricts residential development, while the H overlay zone regulates the height of structures in order to protect flight patterns near the airport. The applicant is not requesting any changes to the placement of those overlay zones. My gosh. Except for the area shown in blue, this site is proposed, as mentioned earlier, to be changed to an industrial designation and zone. The requested general industrial zone allows most industrial uses while limiting retail, office, and other commercial uses. The blue illustrates the area proposed to remain as open space. This open space area generally follows the portion of the site currently within the environmental overlay zone. In order to be approved, this proposal must be found to have met approval criteria 33.810.050A. This criteria requires decision makers to find that the requested new map designation is on balance equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan as a whole. And to approve the zoning map amendment, criterion 33.855.050A, B, and D must be met. Based on the application and recommendations from the Bureau of Environmental Services, the Bureau of Planning, the Parks Bureau, the Portland Office of Transportation, and the Oregon Department of Transportation, as well as interested persons, BDS staff recommended to the hearings officer partial approval of the requested comprehensive plan map and zoning map amendment. In order to find that the balance of policies would be equally or better met, Staff recommended that Parcel 4, which is located between the two sloughs, be retained as open space. This would increase the amount of open space area to 36 acres. To address Goal 6 and to address zoning map amendment adequacy of service criteria, staff recommended numerous transportation-related conditions. In a public hearing on March 24th, I presented the staff recommendation, and the applicant and many interested persons submitted written and oral testimony to the hearings officer, Mr. Gregory Frank. On May 15th, Mr. Frank issued his recommendation to the City Council. The hearings officer found that the open space and environmental and economic development policies are most relevant to this request and therefore should be given the most weight when determining the balance of policies. The hearings officer recognized there is a serious need for additional parcels of industrial land. However, for this case, the open space and environmental policies can and should be given priority over the economic development policies. Mr. Frank was persuaded that the Colwood open space is unique and practically irreplaceable. Therefore, he recommends that the comprehensive plan map designation change be denied. Without approval of the comprehensive plan map change, the zoning map must also be denied. This is an aerial photo that helps identify the general vicinity of the Colwood site and the surrounding development. The entrance to the golf course facility is off Northeast Columbia Boulevard. Northeast Alderwood Road winds through the site, linking Columbia Boulevard to Northeast 82nd Avenue and to the Port of Portland Airport facilities. Northeast Cornfoot Road runs east-west into the site and terminates at the intersection of Alderwood Road. North of the golf course is Port of Portland property, which is within the current airport master plan boundary. Northwest of the site are military facilities such as the Air National Guard. These facilities are also on Port of Portland property and are also within the airport master plan boundary. To the east, there are industrial and employment uses and airport-related uses such as hotels. The sites to the west are developed with industrial uses. Directly south of this site is a 25-acre site owned by Portland Parks and is being planned for park improvements. Now I will show a few slides of the site and surrounding area. This is the golf course clubhouse that is located near the intersection of Alderwood and Columbia Boulevard. This building has a pro shop, restaurant, bar, and meeting space. The facility parking lot is located east of the clubhouse. Behind the clubhouse is a putting green and a portion of the golf course. This photo represents key features of the site. There are grass-covered fairways, mature deciduous and conifer trees and shrubs, and vegetation along the sloughs. This 18-hole golf course is like most courses. It has tee boxes, greens with flags. Some of the holes have sand and water hazards, and there are paths for motorized golf carts. From Alderwood Road, looking east, this photo shows the backside of the clubhouse. On the west side of Alderwood Road, you see more of the course. This is identified as Parcel 6. This is looking to the west at the intersection of Northeast Alderwood Road and Cornfoot Road. The remaining photos that I will be showing of the golf course were taken in this general vicinity, which is about at the middle of the site, near the city streets and near the branches of the sloughs. Here the camera is pointing in a northeast direction from inside Parcel 4. You will notice that many of the photos were taken during winter when the deciduous trees lacked foliage. From the upper level looking west, this photo shows much of Parcel 4. This parcel extends over 1,200 feet from Alderwood Road to its western edge. This shows the slough from the Alderwood Road Bridge looking west. From Parcel 4 looking southwest on a raised area, we can see an open view of Whitaker Slough. Here is a view of Whitaker Slough near Alderwood Road. This space or area is proposed to remain designated as open space. On the east side of Alderwood Road, the slough continues. You can see one of the pedestrian bridges spanning over the waterway. This area adjacent to the slough is also part of proposed Parcel 7. And this shot was taken looking southeast from Alderwood Road. In the distance, you can see some of the buildings near Northeast 80th and Columbia Boulevard. Now I will show a few photos of the surrounding development. To the north is Port of Portland-owned property with airport-related development. This photo shows buildings associated with the Air National Guard. You see in the foreground part of the golf course. East of the Colwood site on Alderwood Road is the Country Inn Suites Motel and Benin Restaurant and Lounge. Directly across the street from the motel is the Airport Business Center. This is an industrial park with multiple buildings and a variety of businesses located here. East of the Colwood site off of Columbia Boulevard is the ITT Technical Institute, a technical college. And then north of the college are a mixture of industrial employment and airport-related businesses. This development is seen from the golf course, which is elevated above the adjacent sites. Directly south of the Colwood property, we see the city-owned Parks Bureau site, the Thomas Coley Park. You see that the site is elevated and grass-covered. In the foreground, there is a paved area. Railroad tracks separate the paved area from the park. The paved area, which abuts Northeast Columbia Boulevard, is not part of the city-owned property. Looking towards the southwest, we see more of the city property. Further west, an exterior storage area is located on the south side of the street between the city property and Columbia Boulevard. And further west on the south side of Columbia Boulevard, there are numerous sites that contain large exterior storage areas for trucks and heavy construction equipment. Directly west of the Colwood site, on the north side of Columbia Boulevard, is Colwood Way, a private street. This business on the corner of Columbia Boulevard and Colwood Way sells, rents, and repairs forklifts. This photo shows other industrial buildings located on the west side of Northeast Colwood Way. This concludes my presentation. In addition to myself, there are other staff available to answer questions. The Portland Office of Transportation, Oregon Department of Transportation, the Parks Bureau, staff from the Bureau of Environmental Services, and the Planning Bureau are all in attendance. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. And before we go any further, I forgot to ask the clerk to read the title of the item we're considering. So could you please do that now, Sue?
Consider the proposal of Hartle Development Company applicant and Colwood Partnership owner and the recommendation from the hearings officer for denial of a comprehensive plan map amendment and zoning map amendment for Colwood National Golf Course located at 7313 Northeast Columbia Boulevard, LU05138386CP. CC.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Sheila at this point? Okay, thank you. Now we'll hear from the applicant. Come forward.
Good evening.
If you could just please introduce yourselves, and you'll have 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Saltzman. Good evening, members of the City Council. My name is Steve Janik. I'm an attorney representing the applicant. And our planning consultant, Trina Whitman, is going to help me. We've prepared some boards with exhibits, and we also have given each of you your own individual copy of them so that you can see them as clearly as possible. With me tonight is the Colwood team and my partner, Jack Orchard. Colwood, just so you know, is made up of 22 individuals. The name of the applicant makes it sound like a monolithic corporation, but it's in fact 22 individuals that have owned this property for decades. In fact, the property was designated decades ago as a golf property, a golf course, and open space. And that was not because there was a detailed study of its characteristics as valuable open space or its environmental capabilities, but rather, as the record shows, it was simply designated open space because it was a golf course. Unfortunately, Colwood will not remain a golf course. It is no longer economically viable and will close in the near future. Both its own age and problems, as well as, more importantly, problems in the golf industry, make that a fact. In light of that, we need to look at what the future of this property will be. The port, as you know, has designated the northerly 48 acres of this as part of the port's year 2000 master plan for ultimate use for airport operations, and it's not for the third runway. That airport master plan involved input from the city and from neighborhood participants. The city and the port are now currently working together on what's called airport futures, and that planning effort also includes this 48 acres. The Colwood site is surrounded by industrial and employment zoning. As you can see from the zoning map, all of those areas in pink or various shades of pink are all industrial and employment. It's a complete island within a very heavily concentrated industrial and employment area. Now, faced with the inevitable closure, Colwood came up with a plan for its 137 acres. And that plan was to, quite frankly, recognize the importance of the 22 acres that consists of the slough area and the riparian areas around the slough. And that plan, which you've seen before, is our plan to not only leave those in an open space designation, but to give them to the city. The balance of the property would then be rezoned for industrial use. And the width of that area, 22 acres, is sufficient under the applicable standards to protect the slough and its riparian systems. Now, Colwood recognized that that is valuable public space. The city has spent a lot of money trying to improve the slough, and we want to contribute to that. In addition to that, by donating it to the city, it will be publicly accessible for the first time to all the public. We'll create a kayak launching area, and we'll give $100,000 to the Park Bureau to help enhance and restore that area. That will leave, after the port's 48 and the 22 acres here, 67 acres of prime industrial land. As you will hear tonight, that industrial site is the very best site still left in the city of Portland for major industrial development. In addition, Colwood has agreed to spend $6 million on transportation improvements that are necessary. PDOT has consistently supported this plan change in part because the improvements we'll make to Columbia Boulevard, the Cully intersection, the railroad crossing will all be built with private, non-public funds. Now, the issue before you is pretty succinct. You've got the competing interests in front of you. The neighbors want, and in fact, the neighbors deserve, a neighborhood park and protection of the slough. The applicant wants to develop the other properties than the 22 acres. And what you need to decide is what is in the best interest of the entire city, not just the desires of me and my clients and the people who are sitting in this auditorium. You also have competing interests in your own bureaus. Bureau of Development Services supports the plan change because of the significant job creation potential. If you look at what the Bureau did there, they wrote a 60-page analysis of every single applicable comprehensive plan and found that on balance, what we propose would equally or better serve the goals of the comprehensive plan. BES approves the plan change, subject to the condition that we give somewhat a larger area near the sloughs, which is this parcel 4 that people have talked about. The bureau that opposes it is the Parks Bureau. The Parks Bureau wants the entire site to be left as open space. Parks, in their written response to the hearings officer, takes the position that privately owned open space should provide for the public needs for open space. In other words, the public benefits of open space, those values, those vistas, should be provided by private landowners without city acquisition or city compensation. Now, out of those conflicting points of view, I think there is a win-win. That win-win, in our opinion, is to grant the plan change on the 115 acres and reap the economic benefits of that, over 1,900 family wage jobs, achieve city ownership of the 22 acres of important habitat and riparian area, but at the same time, create a high-quality, active-use neighborhood park in the right portion of the Cully neighborhood, where it is needed, not here, where it doesn't work. Now, the hearings officer's recommendation is a matter of legal error. He simply started and ended by saying one goal, the open space goal, takes priority over the economic goal. That approach was condemned by the Court of Appeals in Walker Associates versus Clackamas County in 1992, and all the cases since then have followed the disapproval of that. The Bureau of Development Services staff report did the correct analysis. They looked at each and every goal that was applicable. They didn't say one took greater priority over the other, and they came out with the correct analysis. If you follow his approach and one goal predominates over all others, then no change can be made in any context if that goal predominates all others. And that's not what the law says you should do. The hearings officer did not in any way balance the economic improvements that would come from the jobs by granting the change and weigh those against potential adverse effects on the open space, and he gave no explanation for his position. Now, you, the city, have in the past completely rejected that approach by the hearings officer. In 92-00488, you changed the comprehensive plan designation of city-owned open space to allow a call center, finding that there would be some park-related improvements funded through the call center budget, and you felt those improvements were sufficient to override the open space goal, similar to what we are proposing here with the 22 acres that we are donating. In 92-00603, you changed the open space designation of city-owned property so that you could allow an impoundment parking lot for vehicles. You did so based on findings that the site was not appropriate for open space because the site was in an industrial sanctuary, like this site, on a major street, like this site, used by trucks, industrial vehicles, and regional traffic, like our site. And in LUR 970158, in reverse, the hearings officer said the industrial sanctuary goal was far more important and was a priority. And what you said is the following. This interpretation transforms one policy, which is to be read in balance with the comprehensive plan as a whole, into an absolute prohibition against redesignation of industrial zone lands. We reject this interpretation in support of a more balanced approach, and you were right on with what the Court of Appeals requires. So your goal here tonight is to look at the applicable goals. Let's briefly summarize them. 2.6, open space. Provide opportunities for recreation and visual relief by preserving Portland's parks, golf courses, trails, parkways, and cemeteries. Policy 8.9, open space. Protect Portland parks, cemeteries, and golf courses through an open space designation on the comp plan. Listen to those. Those are not mandates. Those are general directions of what you ought to be thinking about, not absolute requirements that you can never convert an existing privately owned golf course to something other than open space. You have to balance that against the other policies. Industrial sanctuaries, 2.14. The mandate, provide industrial sanctuaries. Encourage the growth of industrial activities in the city by preserving industrial land primarily for manufacturing purposes. The Colwood site is surrounded by an industrial sanctuary. Goal 5, economic development. Foster a strong and diverse economy which provides a full range of employment and economic choices for individuals and families in the city. That is a mandate. That is a requirement of what the plan is asking you to do. And policy 5.7 says, promote business, economic growth, formation of capital, and creation and retention of jobs. And what you must do with those policies is first examine the facts that you hear before you and assess the impacts on each of those policies from the facts presented. The impact of having 115 acres of industrial land for job employment. The impact on open space of getting 22 acres of publicly accessible, valuable open space, against the negative impacts of changing 115 acres from what is now a private golf course and is not accessible to the public. Once the council has found the facts, then you need to balance. Now let's look at the facts. The Colwood property is a bad choice for a park. It's poorly located, it's in an industrial sanctuary, it's surrounded on all three sides by the Air National Guard, industrial uses, and a heavily traveled street. A public process has never, never suggested Colwood as a site for a public park. The Park Bureau's own Park 2020 vision does not mention Colwood as a park site in its assessment of the quadrants of the cities. In fact, this is located too far away from where the Cully neighborhood really deserves a park. The Park Vision 2020 sets out a locational standard for neighborhood parks, and they should be within 1/4 mile to 1/2 mile of the neighborhood to be served. This board shows you exactly the other side. This board shows you where that half-mile boundary shows you just how few residences in the entire Cully neighborhood will be within the Park Bureau's recommended distance to this proposed park site. Only 7% of the residences in the Cully neighborhood will be within the park recommended distance. The area where a park is needed is further to the south. If you look at the neighborhood as a whole and point out the Colwood site, you'll see that there's those purple circles show existing parks and what's within 1/2 mile. Look where the big hole is. That's where the park is needed in the Cully neighborhood. You don't need another park at Colwood. We understand the Park Bureau has $1 million for park improvements allocated for this neighborhood. We'd like to show you an aerial photo that shows you that there's other land closer to that area central in the neighborhood where that park can be built. And as you can see in the middle, point out where Colwood is if you would. And below that to the south is the city park that hasn't been developed yet, Thomas Cully. And further below that to the south is Sacagawea Park that's owned by the city. But look at that bright chartreuse area. That's open, vacant land right next to an existing park. And that's close to where you want, and the Park Bureau says you should have a park. Now, the Colwood site is poorly accessible from the neighborhood. A pedestrian or bicyclist would have to walk or ride down Cully Boulevard, which is an unimproved street with no sidewalks. We have pictures that will match up with these numbers, but let me take you on a walk, starting with number 1, going through number 6, to get to the Colwood site. You have to walk down an unimproved road with no sidewalks. Then you have to cross railroad tracks. Then you have to cross Columbia Boulevard, which is a 5-lane major arterial designated truck route with a posted speed of 45 miles an hour. Here are some photos that show you what you would experience on this scenic journey from the neighborhood to Colwood. It doesn't exactly look like the kind of neighborhood walk you want to have to a neighborhood park. The other thing you need to note is once you get on the site itself, and look around, you saw some of those photos. But let me show you. These are some of the surrounding areas that would be part of the scenic visual environment that you would experience standing on the park itself and looking outward. Those views are unsightly and provide a poor park quality experience. Now, if this plan change is denied, the site will be available only to golfers paying a fee until the golf course goes out of business. How can that kind of an arrangement, privately owned land, function as a neighborhood park? If the plan change is denied after the course closes, the site will be privately owned with no public access and no dedication of 22 acres around the slough. Unless the city plans to acquire all 135 acres, the site cannot and will not function as a park. Parks is effectively arguing that a private landowner be forced to maintain uneconomic open space while providing no public access or use. Now, some have said that shouldn't be a park, should be a habitat area. Well, let's take a look at the facts.
You have about 30 seconds.
Thank you. Metro in its Title 13 process mapped this area and did not map this as having any habitat value except for the 22 acres. The city in its EC mapping did the same thing, and except for the 22 acres found, there's no habitat value. In addition to that, we had Pacific Habitat Services do an on-site study and came to the same conclusion. Except for the 22 acres, there's no habitat value. Yet, as you will hear tonight, this 115 acres is the single most important industrial development site capable of providing 1,900 jobs. And if you want to find a place to build a solar panel array company, this is the only place the city has. Again, we think there's a win-win way for you. We would urge you to follow that. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of the applicant?
Mr. Janik, I have two questions. If I'm going to give you a hypothetical. If we simply adopted the findings and recommendation of the hearing officer, is it your view as the attorney for the applicant that those would be legally insufficient, that they are legally insufficient, and if those were appealed, they would be set aside because either the logic of the decision or the standard applied is, in your judgment, legally erroneous?
Correct. And the case I base that on is a case I argued in the Court of Appeals, number one. Number two, there are no findings from the hearings officer's recommendation. The findings that you have are the staff report that recommends approval of our request with one modification in terms of the amount of the land area that is going to be donated. So you don't have findings from the hearings officer's recommendation, and therefore that decision could not be upheld if you submitted his decision as the findings of fact in this case.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. And the second question I wanted to ask you is, in the proposal that you have advanced on behalf of the applicant, your proposal is to take what's called parcel number 7 and to gift that to the city.
Correct.
And with some other conditions. This may or may not be a fair question, but in thinking about a proposal, why did your client not include parcel 4 so that you have a kind of a contiguous area as part of what would be set aside for open space?
Because we went out and had Pacific Habitat Services do a specific on-site examination of the habitat values of that property. And they found that it had extremely low habitat values, and their report is in the record. Secondly, Metro did not map that area as having any habitat significance. And when the city did the EC mapping for that area, only a small fringe of that parcel was mapped as EC. And therefore, the balance that was not mapped as EC, based on the city's objective scientific assessment, did not have habitat value. And that's the reason. And all of that is in the record.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Janik. Now we'll have supporters of the applicant. Sue, I think we have people probably signed up. Why don't you call the first three supporters of the applicant?
We have 12 sign up. I'll read the names three at a time, and would you come up to the table, please? Lisa Glancy, Colin Sears, Corky Collier, and they'll be followed by Clayton Herring, Bill Bach, and Todd Deneff.
Okay, welcome. You each have 2 minutes, and if you could just state your name for the record. I'm going to start with Lisa.
Good evening. My name is Lisa Glancy, representing the Port of Portland. The Port Commission authorized the purchase of Colwood Parcel 1 in April 2008, contingent on a rezone. This purchase was opportunity-driven, not driven by an immediate need, port need. While the 2000 PDX master plan identified Colwood property for future air cargo development or a primary access road and taxiway for a potential decentralized terminal, Colwood property owners approached the port in 2005 regarding the sale of this property. As you can see from map 1 in front of you, parcel 1 is surrounded by port property on three sides. Port ownership and industrial rezoning of this parcel makes sense. It allows for long-term planning and operational flexibility for Portland International Airport, the region's only international airport. It provides a land buffer between the active airfield and other non-airport uses. The port's purchase of this parcel is contingent upon rezoning and traffic mitigation associated with this rezone. If acquired, final use of the parcel will be determined in the airport futures planning process. No development of the parcel will occur until approval of the airport futures land use plan in 2010. Let me be clear. The port's interest in this parcel is not driven by the need for a third runway. As you can see from the map, the proposed location of a third runway, should the need arise, is over a quarter mile from the Colwood property. Despite slower aviation growth, good long-term planning for PDX and strategic property acquisition to allow flexibility for future PDX growth makes sense. We understand the Concordia is a park-deficient area, and the balancing of city policy objectives is important. We're optimistic that a mutually beneficial solution is possible.
Thank you. Colin.
Hello. Good evening, commissioners. I'm Colin Sears. I'm the Sustainable Industries Manager in the Economic Development Department at the Portland Development Commission. I'm here on behalf of PDC to support a balanced approach which allows for preservation of some of the parcel for open space for the residents, but which also allows for job creation opportunities on the site for Portland residents. So PDC is certainly supportive of a win-win here where residents can win out both ways through quality job creation, but also through open space preservation. So I'm going to talk a little bit about industrial land, and you're going to hear some others. But, you know, there's a notable lack of sites that have 50 acres or more, even just 5 to 10 acre sites in the city of Portland for companies that need new facilities, especially many of the alternative energy companies we've been working with to recruit. We're seeing a lot of activity despite the economic downturn, and we have a high interest there. A 50, 60 acre parcel that would be available for solar manufacturers, renewable energy would be a great benefit to the region. So want to make sure you understand that. Additionally, for just our advanced manufacturing sector as well, we've seen a lot of activity, consolidations as far as plants that need to modernize, and we want to keep those jobs in the city of Portland if possible, and this land would allow us to do that. So the other point I want to make is on equity. These jobs, by making industrial land available, that would make job opportunities for those two-thirds of our residents that don't have bachelor's degrees a chance to have middle-income jobs. And so, therefore, we support this rezoning of a portion of the land for the economic development opportunities it presents for Portland.
Thank you. Corky.
Good evening. My name is Corky Collier. I'm executive director of the Columbia Corridor Association. CCA's mission is to improve prosperity in the Columbia Corridor. Prosperity isn't just net income. It's jobs close to home. It's parks even closer to home. And the Coley neighborhood is woefully deficient of parks, a deficiency I would hope that this council would address. However, the Coley Golf Course doesn't make a good park for the Coley neighborhood. I ride my bike from my home in St. John out to my office, which is just past the Coley Golf Course. It's a tough ride. It's a long distance. It's uphill both directions, and it's usually snowing. But the only spot that I really dread is riding from the Coley neighborhood just south of Lombard, across railroad tracks, and a few blocks along Columbia Boulevard as I pass Colwood. If I dread it riding my bicycle, you can bet the kids walking from their homes would not like it either. As much as we'd like to turn that into a park, as much as we'd like to maintain the open space, it makes sense for us to turn that southern section of the Colwood Golf Course into industrial property, just like to the right and to the left of it. It makes sense to maintain that northern section for PDX expansion sometime in the future. And it makes sense to turn the area along the slough into parkland. The hearings officer said, this is a tough case. I don't envy your position, but I ask you to make a sensible decision, not an emotional one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next will be Clayton Herring, Bill Bach, Todd Deneth. They'll be followed by Andy Kangas, Stuart Kang, and Tony Reeser.
Thank you. If you're missing one person.
Ready to go?
You go.
Why don't you go ahead and call up
Right. Andy Kangas, would you like to come up?
Welcome. If you could give us your name for the record, we'll start with you, Clayton.
Good evening. I'm Clayton Herring. I reside at 1708 Southwest Highland Road in Portland. First, I wish to offer my congratulations to Mayor-elect and to our new city commissioner. I'm going to leave my peers and professionals who will follow me to tell you a lot about how badly we need industrial sites. But what I want to talk about is the paradigm that's going on in the global world we live in today, and in a world in which energy and fuel costs are rising. More and more need for industrial property close to port facilities, both air and water. This site, which is surrounded by industrial development, the staff was right about one thing. It is unique. It is a unique opportunity that a city of this size has a piece of land that is juxtapositioned between I-5 and I-205, close to the port, close to the airport, that can meet the changing paradigm that's going on in the world of distribution today. Don't pass up this opportunity to create an employment center. I also wish to say that those of us who have been working in the commercial real estate business and selling this wonderful city realize that job growth has been virtually flat for a decade. You, as new leaders of the community, and those of you who have been leaders in the past, have an opportunity to step up and send a message that we do realize that jobs are important. I go all the way back to the 1972 land use laws. There is a C and there is a D. We've gotten out of balance. Way too much C, not enough D. D being development, C being conservation. You have an opportunity to say, we understand we need jobs. And the Colwood Golf Course and this proposal can meet that. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. President, members of council, I'm Bill Bach with Trammell Crow Company, formerly the Port of Portland. I'm not speaking for the port in any way. Let the port guys know that. I appreciate the challenge that you are facing in trying to blend these uses. This was kind of a common theme in all of my years as industrial development with the port, from Rivergate to Swan Island to other places. We consistently sought to balance out natural resource and recreational uses with industrial uses. I like to think we were successful. I'm sure there are those that don't believe we were, but I'm assure you we tried. I remember one particular case where DEQ had proposed a landfill for Rivergate, and we battled that one from an industrial land standpoint. And if you look at what's happened in Rivergate since then, I think we would be this community would be much worse off without that kind of use. I want to speak, though, for industrial lands and the advantages of this site. First of all, it's near a freeway, near the airport. It's got the infrastructure in place, and I think we all recognize as developers what it costs to put in the kind of roadway access and utility infrastructure that that site is served by. It's not a difficult site to serve, and the alternative is to go someplace where it is more difficult. And it's near employees, and that's been a theme also that we've all tried to approach, is to be close to where people work, or live and work. Again, not locating out where everybody's got to drive to the a long distance for their employment. There are some real opportunities here, I think, and I think that the applicant has offered you some real opportunities to really enhance that section of the slough, to create public access where there is none today, and that's been a difficult section to get to, and then to use the site for economic development purposes wherever possible. I think you really should encourage that. That's my testimony.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Andy Kangas, and I'm with C.B. Richard Ellis. I'm an industrial broker, and I've practiced for 19 years, primarily in the city of Portland. I'm in favor of this proposal because I see day-to-day, factually, that we are turning away jobs from this community and that we are struggling to retain jobs, and particularly when companies want to expand. And I'm really here because I can't frankly imagine a more balanced and responsible approach to a pressing concern that the community has, and that's job creation and how we're going to accommodate almost 2 million people coming into our area over the next 50 years. I really believe, and I think my industry has been crying out for a lot of years about the lack of industrial land in Portland and the metro area, but I believe it really reached a critical level in 2007. I witnessed it firsthand. I watched the city of Ridgefield, Washington, attract hundreds of jobs. I personally had a client leave the Airport Way area to move to Ridgefield when they absolutely wanted to be in the city of Portland. And I can go on and on and on. This, you don't have to take just my word for it. You can talk to, obviously, Colin Sears was here tonight to testify. You can talk to Lynn Boosey. They are literally turning away potentially thousands of jobs, and I think they've done that to about six different companies that have been looking at Oregon in the last 6 months. Again, I find this solution one that balances everyone's concerns. It offers park space, airport expansion, and critical job growth and retention. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. I have a question for you.
Clayton, for you.
Based on the logic that each of you have provided for why this should be industrial land, I want to give you an opportunity to answer a hypothetical that I think, I just want to hear your response. The Broadmoor Golf Course, which is up the street, could be, if an applicant came in and wanted it zoned industrial, I think all the arguments that you've supplied today could be brought to bear on that particular parcel and would be just as valid for the Broadmoor Golf Course, with the exceptions that have been noted by previous speakers, as could be applied for the Colwood site. I just wanted to see what your reaction to that theoretical is.
We've taken a little look at it. I've taken a look at it. There's not a lot of property there once you start working through the E zones and wetlands and other constraints on that property. Access is very difficult. It's not close to the freeway, and the infrastructure, trying to get a street in there into that property, would be much more difficult. So, at least from my perspective, it doesn't have those same attributes that the Colwood site has. I'm not saying it couldn't be done, but not without much greater impact on people's pocketbook, because they'd probably on their resources.
So Colwood should be rezoned because it's more valuable than the Broadmoor.
Well, it's easier to develop. It's easier to develop and has less impact on natural resources.
Frieger family might not agree with that, but
I don't represent anybody.
I take a more global approach to it. I mean, I can't tell you specifically about Broadmoor because I haven't really studied Broadmoor, and Bill may be absolutely right, but What Arlie said and what others will say is absolutely true. And you all have a tough challenge. I mean, quality of life starts with a quality job. We need sites to be able to compete, or we're going to drive people north and south down I-5, up I-5.
I agree with that, but I'd like to know whether the argument you've made over the specific side of
quality. It could.
Yes.
Yeah. It could.
Yeah, it's. I would make the same argument, but what Bill said is absolutely accurate. It's just going to be a much more challenging site.
Thank you.
Next are Stuart Skang, Tony Reeser, and Marianne Haynes. They'll be followed by John Molis and Robert Butler.
Welcome. If you would give us your name for the record, and you each have 2 minutes. We'll start with you.
Stuart Skog.
Go ahead.
Okay. Good evening. I'm with CB Richard Ellis. I'm an industrial property advisor. And my comments tonight are based primarily on the opportunity that Colwood presents, a large integrated solar energy manufacturing company to locate operations that will benefit from Colwood's size, proximity to available employee pools, access to competitive power and other utilities, as well as the business energy tax credit and other economic incentives that the state is actively offering to renewable energy types of companies. To begin with a bit of background, solar power is one of the fastest growing sectors on the global energy market today. The market for photovoltaic solar energy has seen an average growth rate of about 40% over the last few years, with grid-connected solar power being by far the largest and fastest growing segment. Grid-connected solar energy